Welcome to East Meets West, episode 176. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And this is the podcast where Roger and I generally just talk about whatever's on our mind. But we travel from politics to science fiction. We try to bring you the best of the world's culture.
Okay.
We had a lot of people.
You could say,
since we started doing it on the Twit Network, we've had a lot of people questioning what the heck this show's about. And in fact, we don't know yet.
Yes. In fact, it goes beyond the Seinfeld-esque the show about nothing, when this show is really about everything.
Yeah.
Except that it's everything of indeterminate origin.
Of indeterminate topics. Yeah. So I was reading an article this morning about phosphorus, which is one of the main components in fertilizer. I believe nitrogen, phosphorus, and a few other. What's the other thing? It's nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Three main ingredients in fertilizer, and we only have a few decades of phosphorus left in phosphorus reserves. In fact, there's a phosphorus monopoly practically in Morocco. Morocco holds the vast majority of the world's phosphorus. So just like Saudi Arabia and the countries around that have somewhat of a monopoly on oil. I guess you can't say somewhat of a monopoly, but they have lion's share of the oil in the world. Morocco has the lion's share of the phosphorus, and if we don't figure out how to recycle and reuse phosphorus, we just let it drain away into the oceans. It causes algal blooms. We could, in fact, run out of phosphorus,
and we would run out of effective ways to fertilize our massive amounts of crops. Which could lead to, could definitely lead to a global food shortage.
It sounds like a joke. A lot of people in the chat room are just talking about, you know, like making jokes about it. And it is funny sounding that we run out of phosphorus, but Roger's right. We run out of phosphorus. We can't make fertilizer. We can't continue to feed the world. We're already short on food. We're consuming more food than we make. So that's a problem on its own. If we run out of fertilizer, it could get ugly.
Yes. When you say we, I take it you mean the entirety of humanity, because the U.S. actually produces more than we eat. We actually export.
Correct. I mean the entirety of all of us, the world, east, west, and in between.
One of the things about food shortages is they're typically man-made. It's never because there is no food. It's because of transportation, corruption, where literally you'll have, you know, sacks and sacks of rice and grain sitting in a warehouse because you haven't paid off or bribed the right official to get it moved out. It's so many of the world's famines, if you actually trace it to its root source, is usually caused by war, a conflict of some type, or some sort of political intrigue behind the scenes.
Now, we are going to talk about Zombieland and Stargate Universe later in this show, but
I haven't seen Stargate Universe yet.
We want to bring this phosphorus thing to your attention. I wanted to bring it to your attention just simply because I was stunned. I had heard nothing about this. We've heard a lot about the food shortages. In fact, we've talked about that on East Meets West. And we can debate what the real causes of that are. Like you say, a lot of the causes are corruption and war, although we've had corruption and war for a long time, and we've always had food surpluses in the world until recently.
We also have a lot more people.
That's the biggest problem.
Used to.
Too many people. And it's only going to get worse as the developing nations gain technology and gain wealth. Their populations are going to rise before they start to fall. Now, at a certain point, when you get advanced enough, it seems that countries' populations either steady out or fall. But it's going to take a while before we get to that point.
It could. I mean, East Asia, specifically Korea, Taiwan, and Japan, have actually shrunk their populations. They actually have a birth rate similar to that of Europe, which is
no longer developing nations, right?
But it took them a period of time to experience that same kind of regression of. I don't want to say negative birth rates, but essentially, I mean,
at least stable, if not declining. Yeah.
And that's, you know, that probably has something to do with, you know, a combination of things, population density. I mean, there's only so far you can spread it before you hit up against someone else. And the whole idea of having a bunch of kids when you're crammed into a into an 8 by 8 foot room. You know, it doesn't sound as appealing.
Now, this thing about phosphorus, a lot of people are saying, oh, we'll find a way to get around it. We'll find a new way. And yes, we will. I believe that. I'm actually optimistic on that. But we need to do it. We don't know what that way is now. And a lot of folks are like, oh, well, you know, organic fertilizers. We just use crap, right? The problem is you can't make enough crap, seriously, to grow the amount of crops we need to feed everybody. So until those developing nations, you know, reach the point that Korea has reached that Roger's talking about, it's kind of scary.
It's well, you also have to understand that a lot of the crops we grow aren't foodstuffs. Tobacco. We grow a lot of grain for feed, livestock feed. We use fertilizer to grow things that, you know, might be used in industry. I mean, corn is, not to pick on corn, but corn is one of those hugely subsidized crops that people are trying to invent ways of using, like ethanol and what was it?
Well, and that's, you know, that's one of the problems, right? And you've brought this up before, is that we use corn to make ethanol, and now we don't have enough corn.
We're
burning our there's an imbalance, or not an imbalance, but there's a fight over organic resources, whether we should use them to feed people or to make fuel,
power our cars.
Yeah,
and you know it goes back to, like, you know, kind of reprioritizing how we want to look at, you know, the way we use resources. I mean, you know, fishing's another one. If people used to think the seas are endless, the fish will always be there, now they're finding out that, you know, places in the Atlantic and Pacific have literally been fished out. There are fish.
It's a common problem in all kinds of. We're running out of water. Though there's certain aquifers that can be replenished, but we're pumping them faster than they can be replenished. And there's certain aquifers that are, I think they're called ancient aquifers, that aren't recharged, and we're pumping those dry too. Yeah. So freshwater running out could be. But boy, this is depressing. You know,
well, it is. I mean, you're like, even like, take Australia. I mean, like, the Murray River, from what I understand, is that, like, literally dry lake beds in certain parts of it. And it's caused a lot of grief amongst the farmers because there's no more water for agriculture. You know, having a potable water source is something that we take for granted. But when you realize how little of it there really is, it's kind of frightening the way we kind of use it in almost a capricious manner. Like, you know, hey, I'm going to go wash my car. I'm going to go leave the water running while I brush my teeth. It's all these little things that kind of add up. And maybe it'll make people a lot more aware when they see their water bills rise or something, or you got to build a big desalinization plant down in, like, you know, LA, the LA docks or something. So kind of freaky.
Yeah, it is. And we will probably – I'm okay, yeah. We all know that we need to watch our resources, right? We hear all this green crap all the time, and I think that almost hurts the cause more than it helps, because then people just go out and they buy more things that are got green slapped on them that don't necessarily help. Sometimes they do. But then we have debates over climate change this, climate change that. There's some real honest to factual resource problems that we need to fix. And I really do believe we will. I don't believe the solution is necessarily, you know, that we all need to throw up our arms in the air and run around like mad and protest.
I agree with you. I actually, one of the things that annoys me most about, you know, carbon limits, you know, global warming stuff, is it's also academic. It's done in such a fashion where it's a big news item, but it's like, you know, this polar ice cap is melting, this is melting. But for a lot of people, unless it's something that affects them, you know, when they open the door.
A lot of people in the audience right now are like, this is boring. Yeah. I don't care. I don't care if we have enough food. That's the issue right there. You know, people, how do you make a phosphorus shortage sexy so that somebody who wants to sit back and be entertained cares? You know, you need Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, I guess, to come out and talk about the poor starving children that they're going to adopt because there wasn't enough fertilizer to grow crops in Africa.
There's actually enough farmland in Africa to feed the entire continent and then some. But again, it all boils down to governance, corruption, conflict, and ethnic tensions that totally make, you know, how in the hell are you going to plant crops when you're constantly being harassed by a group of people, either be it the government's cronies, you know, a neighboring group of people who don't want you there. It's just, you know, stability adds so much to the infrastructure of a nation.
Yeah. In fact, there's a really good article a couple of several months back now. I think it might have been that May issue of Scientific American about the food shortage. And the guy who wrote it started off saying, you know, I've been put off taking this line for a long time because I didn't want to be an alarmist. And I didn't believe that it was really a problem. And so many people blow it out of proportion, but we could run out of food and I'm scared to death. So when somebody like that, who's been sort of, mm-hmm. you know, I'm a reasonable, objective scientist, and I don't want to do this, feels compelled to write an article in Scientific American, starts to shake me a little bit. At least makes me pay attention to it. But we're probably
back
all going
to
die.
Gruel.
You're all probably all going to die from zombies before then anyway.
Speaking of zombies, I saw Zombieland. I must admit, I was quite impressed. I thought it was going to be a little more derivative than it was.
I entirely agree. I really expected to enjoy it, but be able to tell where it was going, and I couldn't.
You couldn't. It was great. And then I don't want to spoil it, but there's a great surprise in the middle when they roll into LA, and it's just like,
all right,
wow.
Slight spoiler alert if you don't want to be spoiled at all, but I'm going to say what that surprise is because I read it in a review before I actually saw the movie.
Oh,
and
okay.
I don't think it spoiled the movie for me at all. But there is a cameo by, here comes the spoiler. There's a cameo by, close your ears, Bill Murray.
Yes.
And it's awesome. If you're at all a fan, it's worth seeing the movie just for that. Although the movie, fracking hilarious.
It was great. It literally took a lot of the standard zombie tropes, but at the same time, while poking fun of it, managed to take him and move it into a new direction. I mean, one of the things is the checklist. Like, that checklist was gold at the beginning. It was
you get that
awesome.
Right out of the gate at the beginning of the movie. And even then, I started to think, oh, okay, I know what's going to be on this checklist. No, you don't. There's some stuff that you knew is going to be on there, and then there's some stuff that is just hilariously brilliant that is on there. But I was expecting to enjoy the movie, and I ended up loving it.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not a big Woody Harrelson?
Yeah, Woody Harrelson. Yeah. You know, the guy who was Coach's assistant on Cheers.
Not a big fan, but I actually really liked his performance in that movie. I think it kind of played to his strengths.
Yeah. I think so, too, because he plays sort of a hard-bitten, more what you would expect in a post-apocalyptic universe. But they throw in some twists to his character that you're not expecting. And then the main character is a younger, sort of bumbling, geekish kid who plays Warcraft all the time before everything goes sour. And he's a very Michael Cera-like character.
That's who I was thinking the entire time. Actually, I thought that was him in the movie before I actually saw it.
Uh-huh.
It's like, oh, it's Michael Cera's going to be – because it just lends itself to kind of that style of character.
Michael Cera could have easily played that part, yeah.
Yes, and I must admit I loved it. I mean, it was shot in Georgia. I was actually quite impressed it took place in that wasn't, you know, your standard Hollywood lot in L.A.
Yeah, the kid is in Austin at the beginning, and then he's making his way through Texas, and it's at some point they get to California. But it's odd. That it's all shot in Georgia because you couldn't tell.
I was actually quite impressed because I was with one of the one of our coworkers coworker over at Revision 3, and he said, like, you know, that place looks a lot like, you know, where I live out in the South. So I mean, it's kind of neat. It'd be nice to be able to watch a movie like and say, oh, that isn't their Vancouver lot, or oh, look,
yeah,
it's another
right,
shot
right.
of Toronto masquerading as Chicago / New York.
It's Atlanta masquerading as L.A. instead or whatever, yeah. But it's all post-apocalyptic, right? So it's all good. I think they did a lot of green screen for some of that stuff.
Well, yeah, they did a lot of CG for the panning shots and
What'd
stuff.
What'd you think of the zombies?
The zombies were pretty generic, but it was a mixture of the 28 days later where the zombies are a little quick on the feet. Along with kind of the Day of the Dead.
Yeah, they played it loose with the zombie mythology. Some of the zombies could run, some of the zombies could climb. But they're generally mindless zombies who just wanted to eat you. I mean, that basic premise wasn't messed with. And there was zombie construction workers, zombie rednecks, zombie ladies, sexy zombie ladies, and
morbidly obese zombies.
Zombie clown.
Yes. It was pretty much everything that you could zombify. I was actually expecting zombified animals.
Yeah, we didn't see any zombified animals in this one. Did you think it was like Shaun of the Dead?
There was a lot of comparisons to that. I don't think Shaun of the Dead was as well directed as this movie, simply because I think Shaun of the Dead tried to send up too many of the standard cliches in zombie movies. So it spent so much time doing that that I thought it kind of affected the overall pace and the feel of the movie. Mm-hmm. Where this one really did feel like a standalone zombie movie that might be, you know, in some way influenced or an homage to certain things, but didn't feel like the entire movie was just one giant homage. It felt like
it was different in a lot of ways. I mean, it's similar because it's comedy. It's the tale of sort of your down on the heels, you know, underachiever caught up in the post-apocalypse. But whereas Shaun of the Dead is very much a story about it happening, mm-hmm. this story takes place. It's already happened. And they're dealing with the aftermath. It's a little while after it happened. You get a few flashbacks, but it's not about, oh my gosh, how do we deal with it when it happens? It's how do you deal with the aftermath? And it's this is going to sound cheesy, but it's actually a story about characters. It's a story about how people relate.
It's character growth.
Yeah, which is what makes good stories.
And it's funny, it's done in kind of a zombie milieu, but it's very much kind of not a coming of age, but really just coming to terms with what you've always needed in life and the things that you thought you had but didn't really have, which is great.
So you didn't watch Stargate Universe, huh?
No, I was too busy yesterday. I went to the Pinball Expo, and I saw Whip It.
Oh, you saw Whip It. Okay. Instead of watching Stargate Universe, you were able to see Zombieland and Whip It. Whippet's the roller derby movie, right?
Love roller derby, and it has Juno.
The girl from Juno,
Ellen Page. Someone taught me here, but it's basically another kind of coming of age story, like you know, understanding, you know, the people around you and what they actually mean to you in the end. You know, after all the glitz and the glamour is gone, but it was fun. The only downside to the movie was the actual the roller derby sequences were actually a lot slower than an actual game of roller derby.
Oh, really? That's like, interesting. Now you're a big roller derby fan. You've been to a bunch of are they games, matches? What do you call them?
Yeah, a bunch of the games up here in San Francisco, and it's really, I mean, it's fun to watch because it embodies so many of the things that you know that people like about traditional sports. One, it's contact.
Mm-hmm. You can knock each other around, right?
It's not just about skill, and it's not just about strength. It's about combining both of them. You know, being strong enough to whip someone around, but also, you know, strategizing, to use a Don King term, strategize a way around your opponents and kind of. It's a really fun sport. I don't know. It's not something that you would probably see on ESPN or some sort of world competition, but it definitely is something I think most people would get a kick out of because it has enough action and suspense as well as kind of a certain strategy to it that I think would appeal to most people.
I do want to see it. It looks like it would be really funny.
Did you like Stargate Universe? I recorded it on my PC.
Yes, definitely watch it. I liked it enough, but I am probably not hard enough on it. I know most people were bored to tears by it. It's a two-hour-long premiere. It kept my interest because I wanted to see what they were doing with. But essentially, imagine this. It's the writing and production. Maybe not production, but it's the writing and storytelling of Stargate marriaged with people imitating the cinematography and production of Battlestar Galactica.
Huh. Well, that should be... It's quite a mashup there.
Yeah, so you get the dark, gritty space universe. You get the shaky documentary cam style, you know, and the weird, you know, sort of perspective shots here and there. But the storytelling is very simple. And anybody who doesn't know, somebody, I don't remember who, somebody in the chat room called it Stargate Voyager, which is very apt. They go through this Stargate. They're kind of forced through it by certain events. And they arrive on a ship, and they don't even know where they are. And it turns out that they can't go back through the Stargate. So they're lost far from home. Sound familiar? And have to figure out how they're going to get back. No, not Superman. Voyager. It's not like they were like launched by their father to avoid an exploding planet. It's not Superman at all. This is totally Star Trek Voyager's premise, right? Through events beyond their control, they're thrown far away and have to figure out alien technology to get themselves home.
Actually, it sounds like Buck Rogers thrown through the future, and he must come to grips with the fact that everything.
Yeah, but there's no time travel here either. Yeah, you know.
But it's still the same premise of dislocation. And
I think Voyager is spot on, because all Voyager was an Enterprise, a Federation vessel gets thrown far away and has to make. And will they make it home? I don't know. It's going to be a struggle.
I don't know.
They're going to meet aliens.
You know, I knew Voyager was in trouble the first time I saw that ship. They flew around it. I'm sorry. Anything that looks like a garden trowel or a hole is just you know you're in trouble when a ship looks so bland that you can mistake it for a garden implement.
Yeah. We have seen outside shots of the Stargate universe during this, and it looks more on the Star Wars Star Destroyer side of things than on the clean lines of the Federation.
Does it have any of the Gould style kind of pyramidic?
No. It's done by the ancients. You learn that early on. So if you know the Stargate universe at all, you know what that means. But it's not the Goa'uld. It's a pre-human whatever, before ascension.
One thing that's always bothered me in kind of the Stargate universe was when they were trying to explain the ancients. Like, what, it's not so much going out and trying to discover who they were and where they went, but kind of explaining it to the point where you kind of destroy the mystery, you destroy the magic. There are these people that elevated to a higher being of existence, and you know, in many ways, they ended up like the Q, right? Because they were not allowed to toy with the development of lesser beings, but
there was
a
one rebel, who couldn't resist, and his name was Michael Shanks. There's also cameos by Amanda Tapping, Michael Shanks, and Richard Dean Anderson. So,
cameos in so much like at the beginning they said so long.
No, it's not quite that bad. It's not like Star Trek Enterprise with Scotty and Spock? No. I can't remember now. Who was with Kirk on the bridge when he gets sucked out? And I think it was Scotty and Sulu, maybe.
Is this Generations? Are you talking about?
I was talking about Generations, yeah.
Okay. I don't remember. Oh, no, I just remember.
That was like one of the most worthless cameos ever. But it's better than that. No, and they come in different parts, and their parts make pretty good sense, I have to say. They're weaved into the plot in ways that it didn't feel totally forced. Maybe the Michael Shanks one felt a little bit forced, but you could also see the character doing the thing that he did, which is instructional tapes on the entire Stargate program.
That guy is so typecast at this point.
Yeah, he's done.
Sorry.
Even people who look like Michael Shanks are done. They can't do anything else.
It's so funny because he left the show. Remember? That's why they offed him, because he wanted to go and explore his career.
And then he missed it. He's like, no, I feel just
I
like
paycheck.
Denise Crosby did. I want back. All right, we got a few comments. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay, we got a few comments on the blog, subbrilliant.com/EMW, subbrilliant, 2 Bs, 2 Ls. Matt97 said, I wanted to say that it's pathetic, all these directors coming out in support of a pedophile, a.k.a. Roman Polanski. I don't see anyone saying it's okay for other pedophiles who committed their crimes in the 60s getting off due to their age or length of time since their crime. So why is it okay for Roman Polanski? You got an answer for him?
Because everyone that supports him are a bunch of hypocrites. I honestly actually am really kind of incensed by that whole thing. It's one thing to say like, oh, he deserves a fair trial, you know, or maybe a redone trial. But to say that, you know, it's no longer an issue. The girl that's now a woman is like, you know, has dropped the charge. She actually dropped the charges. He paid her off. And
so,
to,
so what's the controversy if she dropped the charges? Is it the government?
He skipped his hearing.
Okay.
He fled the country before he was sentenced.
So that's what they're after. Yeah, I have to agree. I think Zenny Jardin from Boing Boing, her posts on Twitter about this pretty much reflect what I think about it, which is also very similar to what Matt's saying here, which is, why does he get an out? He made great movies. Okay, I understand that, but
His history. He came from a family that suffered the Holocaust. I understand. Doesn't mean suddenly because you suffered some great, tragedy in your life, doesn't mean give you a get out of jail pass for committing, something heinous. It's just, I don't know. And just reading more on the case, it gets me more annoyed and riled up because, essentially he just drugged up the girl.
No, it's unforgivable. And if proven true in court, which we assume it would be based on what we know, it's a crime he deserves to pay for. Like anyone else who would have committed that. It's because he directs great movies. It doesn't mean he should get off for it. Absolutely not. If he was proved innocent, great. Then, sorry that, you were falsely accused. And he hasn't gone to trial. That's the thing. So we don't really know. That reminds me of the whole Letterman thing this week, where it's like people are creeped out by his admission, but we don't know the details of what happened. People like to jump to conclusions. And in this case, it's weird because a lot of people are jumping to the opposite conclusion. Oh, so he did it. What's the big deal? I think that's crazy. If he did do it, he doesn't get off just because he's a good director.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't get off the charges because he's a good director.
No, he does not.
Finally, Vance14 says, the sci-fi tweet he was talking about was actually the one right before the one I quoted last week. And that was when SYFY on Twitter said, it's official, the first season of Warehouse 13 is our most successful series ever, thanks to you, our amazing viewers, woohoo. Then went on to talk about the 8 out of 10 in a subsequent tweet, and that's what I promoted, or that's what I read. Vance says, I will say again that I think I enjoy the show more than you because I am not expecting anything more out of it than fun and games, and something my son and I can watch together. Yes, it's cutesy comedy, can sometimes get over the top, and there are gaping logic holes, but really the writing is no worse than the SG-1 episodes I have seen. The comedy is more clever, and the acting much better. Ooh, I don't know if the acting's better.
I don't know if the comedy's all that clever. I mean, it's pretty standard. It's different strokes for different folks.
Absolutely. Vance also says, I am really looking forward to Stargate Universe, another show I can really sink my teeth into, a la BSG. I'm also hoping that Sci-Fi's Riverworld, due out next year, is not a disappointment. So we talked a little about Stargate, but Vance, let us know what you thought of Stargate. And anybody else, want to let us know what you thought of Zombieland, what you think of Phosphorus, what you think of Whippet, subbrilliant.com/EMW, where you can also tell us your tales of what you think of this show. We have enlisted PodTrack to help us do some audience research. So we actually need, I think, only like 11 or 12 more people to get us to the minimum level of audience research because we're going to try to sell ads on the show. We've talked about it for years and years and years, and then we realized, hey, we don't need to do this. We can get somebody else to do it. So they need some surveys. It's a long, painful survey. Try to fool you. It's only like 5 minutes, but I took it myself and it felt a little long. But if you make it through to the end, we really appreciate it. And a lot of people have done it. So thanks to those who have. And the link, if you want to find for the survey, is at subbrilliant.com/EMW.
Even better.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Roger, you're going to go out and see Zombieland? Because I'm going to go out and try to see Whippet.
I saw Zombieland.
I'm sorry. Are you okay? Are you going to go out and see Stargate Universe? You did see Zombieland,
well,
that's right.
Yes. Oh, I won't.
When I
go
say
out,
go out, I mean go over to the computer that you recorded it on and watch it there.
You mean the one I'm using now? Yes.
Yes. Once you close Skype, are you going to watch that? Well, yeah, so maybe we can talk about it a little more next week, get your opinions on it. And really, honestly, everybody, we didn't get a lot of comments this week. And I know we went a few weeks there where we weren't reading them, but we do love your comments. So if you have something you would like us to talk about, subbrilliant.com/EMW. Let us know.
Cool. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.